important. We'll be reading some from the commentaries of Srila Jiva Goswami, as well as of course from the commentaries of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Jiva Goswami, our great acharya, possibly the greatest scholar that the world has ever seen. Srila Prabhupada, I was once fortunate enough to hear Prabhupada actually say this, that never has there been a scholar like Jiva Goswami, and never will there be. Through his satsandharvas, he's established the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta. He's established exactly what the philosophy is of Krishna consciousness coming down from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in his Bhagavat Sandarbha, which is the second of the Sandarbhas, Srila Jiva Goswami establishes that the all-pervading aspect of the Supreme, because who can say, if one is a theist, one believes in God, one has to say that God is everywhere. Who can say that God, that there is some place where the Supreme is not? Who can say, if one is a theist, that there is someone who is rebelling against God? What is the meaning of God, practically speaking? If there is something outside of his domain, if there is some competitor, if there is some section that he has lost control over. No, God means asama uda. Asama means that no one is equal, and udra means no one is better than him, no one is superior to him. So everything, in one sense, is God, in the sense that there is nothing that is different from the Supreme, from the Absolute. That is what the meaning of the Absolute Truth is, that there is no duality. There is no this is him, and this, on the other hand, is not him. Actually, what we are trying to do in Krishna consciousness is now we have a feeling of duality. Although, in fact, no duality exists in one sense. We are not separate from God, but we have that feeling of being separate from Krishna. And it's a very lonely life for that reason. And we are trying to make those connections continuously, forever, varieties with different people, different partnerships, relationships, money, wealth, clothes, cars, fame, name. We're trying to fill in the gap in our consciousness, that sort of big gaping hole in our consciousness, with something material. But that thing that we are missing is not on the material level, it is on the spiritual level, because we ourselves are spiritual. And that thing is not actually a thing that we are missing, it is a person. It is Krishna. So we have the experience of duality, of being separate from Krishna, and the emptiness that comes from that, but actually it is not a fact. We have to reestablish our relationship with Krishna, and it's there. It is just a matter of uncovering it, remembering it, so to speak. But yet, if one is a theist, one can say, and no one can argue with him, that everything is God in one sense, because nothing is separate from him. But yet, that realization of everything and me are not different from the Supreme is incomplete. So we have heard up to this point, in this particular pastime, in these particular activities, in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, we have heard how the great Brahmavadis, who are known as the Four Kumaras, who are very, very realized souls, but their realization is the oneness of everything, that everything is the Absolute, and I am part of that Absolute. So they have identified with the Supreme, seeing everything. Sarvedam Kalav Brahma. that everything is the supreme, and they're experiencing some great pleasure from that. They're experiencing these four kumaras. Kumara means young boys. Just a little, you could ask. A little softer. Either that, or if he's going to talk loudly, he has to sing. So there's such great pleasure, especially there is when one realizes one's oneness, non-difference from the Supreme. There is a complete absence of misery, which is in itself a great pleasure. So the four kumaras, these four great sages who are in the guise of young boys, they were on this platform, fully understanding how nothing was different from the Supreme. Fully realized in that. Not seeing anything as matter, practically speaking. No, when everything is the supreme to you, everything is supremely peaceful. So they were on that level. There was no duality. They didn't see happiness. They didn't see distress. And yet, they went to the spiritual world, Vaikuntha, to see the Supreme Lord, Lord Narayan. And when they were blocked at the seventh gate to the palace of Lord Narayan, they were blocked and they became angry. And they cursed the two gatekeepers, Jai and Vijay. Now how could they, who were on this platform, become angry? And on the other hand, why did the gatekeepers stop these two exalted personalities from entering? So in the last class, we heard how the gatekeepers were acting improperly for stopping these great sages from entering, and therefore they were cursed by the four kumaras to go down to the material world. But actually, the gatekeepers were not acting improperly, nor were the kumaras, in one sense, acting improperly, because everything was happening by the desire of Krishna, because Krishna wanted to show something. He wanted to exhibit some pastime for our benefit and for his pleasure and for the benefit of the kumaras, because when Krishna does something, everyone is benefited. And practically speaking, if we have that vision, even though we are in the material world, we will not be in the material world. That vision that whatever is happening by the grace of Krishna for a higher purpose, and loving him and living in our relationship and trusting that, that actually will put one in the spiritual world. Jivateo mukti pade sadaya bhak. So when the kumaras cursed the gatekeepers, Lord Narayan came running on his two lotus feet. Even though Garuda was there, he came because he wanted to show his bhakti-vatsala nature, that he was protecting his devotees. And he saw that the kumaras had become angry. Why? Because they wanted to see him. So their anger in that sense was not at all material. They had a spiritual desire. And when one can get angry when one's spiritual desire is being checked. It is legitimate. It's the anger from the soul, not caused by the material energy. So the Lord came himself as fast as he could, which of course is very fast, since he can do whatever he likes and there's no time and space blockages for him. He is the controller of time and space and the controller of the spiritual world. So he came and appeared before the kumaras and exhibited his beauty. Now we heard how when the kumaras saw him, they were astounded and shocked, because they had previously been meditating upon the Lord. They were yogis and had been meditating upon the Lord in their hearts. And now with their eyes they had seen him, and there are descriptions of him and how beautiful he was. Because the Lord, even though He is everything and everywhere, yet ultimately He's a person. And the realization, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Sabyate, the realization that He is a person, when one, a soul, realizes that, and that we are persons, eternally. Yes, we are one with Him in one sense, but we are one, but also there is the duality, there is simultaneously oneness and difference from Him. And therefore the devotees love, the actual devotees, they love the Lord and they love to serve Him. So we're going to be now reading some of these verses, which I said are quite important. So there's some purports that will be read as well. So everyone have to be very patient and listen attentively. So we heard something about the Lord's beauty in text 42. The exquisite beauty of Narayan, being many times magnified by the intelligence of His devotees. In other words, when the devotees would talk about His beauty, then their realization of His beauty would increase. He was so attractive that it defeated the pride of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, in being the most beautiful. My dear demigods, the Lord, who thus manifested Himself, because Brahma is explaining this to the demigods, if you remember how the story is going, this is when Brahma is asked by the demigods of why the universe has become so darkened. Brahma replies, he tells them first about the pregnancy of Diti at an inauspicious time, and then going back further, or actually at this time, he's telling about the cause of these powerful personalities who have taken their birth in the womb of Diti. So, my dear demigods, Brahma says, the Lord who thus manifested Himself is worshipable by me, by Lord Shiva, and by all of you. The sages regarded Him, the four Kumaras, regarded Him with unsated eyes. Unsated eyes means when we look at something material, we can look at it and look at it and look at it. If you go to the movies, for example, and you look, go to a movie and you see it, okay, it may be very exciting, you may see so many beautiful people, but then you go to it a second time and everything starts falling apart in the sense of the plot, you see all the mistakes they make and everything like that, and you see that the beautiful starlet is wearing so much makeup to cover up all the blotches and this and that. And then the third time, you can't even see it anymore. Factually speaking, if you had to see the same movie over and over again, it would be a kind of torture. So that is what it is satiated. Your senses, your eyes, your sense of beauty becomes satiated. It becomes overwhelmed. It cannot register beauty anymore when one sees something material, because everything in the material world has such a limited ability to deliver happiness. But when the four Kumaras, they looked at Him with unsated eyes, that eyes that were unsatiated, they could have just stared at Him and stared at Him and stared at Him due to the spiritual nature of His beauty. Oh, what do they say nowadays? There's an expression, warts and all. Is it? You know that one? You start looking at someone, after all, you start seeing their warts. And when you love somebody, you love them warts and all. Because everyone has some sort of warts, even though we may like try to cover it up. Every material person, every material body has those faults. But Krishna doesn't have those. And His body is so attractive because He is His body. His body is composed of concentrated bliss, spiritual, eternal knowledge, Satchidananda Vigraha. So the four Kumaras, who are already on the transcendentally realized platform, they began to look at him with unsated eyes, and they joyously bowed their heads at his lotus feet. So this is to give us an idea. Of course, we whose eyes are impure or eyes are material cannot understand actual spiritual beauty, but we can get a glimpse of what it must be like. Prabhupada's purport explains, the beauty of the Lord was so enchanting that it could not be sufficiently described. The goddess of fortune is supposed to be the most beautiful sight between the spiritual and material creations of the Lord. She has a sense of being the most beautiful, yet her beauty was defeated when the Lord appeared. In other words, the beauty of the goddess of fortune is secondary in the presence of the Lord. In the words of Vaishnava poets, it is said that the Lord's beauty is so enchanting that it defeats hundreds and thousands of Cupids. Because what is Cupid? When you think of Cupid, what do you think of? Okay, most people don't think of that. What do you think of? The little fellow? Yeah. So by his potency, when Cupid strikes, when the arrow of Cupid strikes someone's heart, whoever you see as so, you fall in love with, and then whoever you love, you see as what? So beautiful, even if they're as ugly as a pooch, a dog. But when love is there, what's that? Love is blind, as the saying goes. So if the potency to make someone appear beautiful, that is Cupid. The potency of beauty is Cupid in the material world. So, but Krishna, his beauty is so enchanting that it defeats hundreds and thousands of Cupids. So his potency is thousands and thousands of times greater. His beauty is thousands of times greater than anything that love can make seem beautiful in this world. So he is so unlimitedly beautiful. He is therefore called Madana Mohan. It is also described that the Lord sometimes becomes mad after the beauty of Radharani. Now this is on a completely different level. This is on a spiritual level, on the Vrindavan level. To let us know that there is so much more that we don't know and don't experience. The Lord sometimes becomes mad after the beauty of Radharani. So the most beautiful becomes mad after the beauty of Radharani. Poets describe that under those circumstances, so the Lord Krishna is Madana Mohan, he becomes Madhanam Daha, or enchanted by the beauty of Radharani. So we can, if Krishna is the most beautiful, so unlimitedly beautiful, we can just imagine the beauty of Srimati Radharani that attracts him. And what is her beauty that attracts him? It is her incredible love for Krishna. She is Krishna's Nardini Shakti. It is, again, love that makes someone beautiful. So her love for Krishna is so powerful that it attracts even Krishna. This is the special characteristics of Vrindavan. Actually, the Lord's beauty is super excellent, surpassing even the beauty of Lakshmi in Vaikuntha. The devotees of the Lord and the Vaikuntha planets want to see the Lord as most beautiful. But the devotees in Gokul or Krishna Loka want to see Radharani as more beautiful than Krishna. So this is a very high subject. The adjustment is that the Lord, being Bhaktivatsal, or one who wants to please his devotees, assumes such features so that the devotees like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva and other demigods may be pleased. Here also, for the devotee sages, the Kumaras, the Lord appeared in his most beautiful feature And they continued to see him without satiation and wanted to continue seeing him more and more. So that is the specific nature of Krishna's beauty about everything connected with Krishna. Krishna's name, Krishna's form, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's qualities. The soul, once he becomes purified and attracted to them, he will never, never stop. He will never come to the limit and wish to try something else. Rather, his love and desire will simply grow. So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Anandam Bhudi Vardhanam Pratipatam. That Krishna consciousness is an ever-increasing ocean of bliss that has no end to it. So that was Prabhupada's comment on the unsated vision of the four Kumaras, and they joyously bowed their head at the lotus feet of the Lord. Well, here we'll read something that Jiva Goswami wrote. Oh, I may not have brought his comment for that mistake. I didn't. Okay. Now, what happened next is wonderful. Remember that the four Kumaras were great Brahmavadis. Their mind was fixed in peace. That means, due to their realization that everything is the Supreme, nothing could agitate or disturb their minds. But then, when the breeze carrying the aroma of the tulsi leaves, remember we heard about the special position of Tulsi Devi, we heard that earlier. When the breeze carrying the aroma of tulsi leaves from the toes of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because tulsi is decorating the feet of Krishna, so pleasing to Krishna. So when the breeze came, it touched the lotus feet of the Lord, which was decorated with tulsi. And then that breeze entered the nostrils of the four Kumaras, of those sages. They experienced the change both in body and mind, even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. So they were fixed in oneness of everything. And when the fragrance of the Lord's lotus feet mixed with the fragrance of tulsi, not even directly the Lord's lotus feet, but indirectly carried by the breeze, when that fragrance entered their nostrils, it shocked them. And their minds, which it was impossible to disturb by anything material, became disturbed. They were already on the transcendental platform, and their minds became disturbed, understanding that this they have never experienced before. This sweetness, this pleasure, even though they were on the transcendental platform, was more than they ever experienced. So Prabhupada explains in this purport. It appears from this verse that the four Kumaras were impersonalists, or protagonists of the philosophy of monism, becoming one with the Lord. But as soon as they saw the Lord's features, their minds changed. In other words, the impersonalists who feels transcendental pleasure and striving to become one with the Lord is defeated when he sees the beautiful transcendental features of the Lord. Because of the fragrance of his lotus feet carried by the air and mixed with the aroma of tulsi, their minds became disturbed and they were shaken from their position of oneness that everything is one. And their minds changed from being impersonalists to being devotees. Instead of becoming one with the Supreme Lord, they thought it wise to be devotees. Becoming a servitor of the lotus feet of the Lord is better than becoming one with the Lord. So this is very important. Because who will trade something superior for something inferior? No one. But who will not trade something inferior? Something superior for something inferior. So this shows that even one who realizes the all-powerful nature of the Lord, when he understands the form, the personality, the beauty of the Lord, he will go higher in his realization and won't cling to that impersonal. Because in this world, there are so few people who are even theists, actually speaking. And of the theists, generally, people, because of their lack of knowledge about the Supreme Lord, what do they think? They think, oh, everything is God, which is true. But when asked about who he is, who that Supreme Lord is, what he does, what he looks like, what can anyone say? Oh, he is ununderstandable, he is a great mystery. Or they say, well, since he's the creator, therefore he must, that means he existed before the creation, therefore he must be old. So therefore imagine how long his beard is. So he's an old man, but you never see his face because, why? Because he must be so wrinkled also. After all those years, after all, I get wrinkled the older I get, so therefore he must get wrinkled too, and his beard must be growing for billions and billions and billions of years, and how white it must be. So therefore, that understanding of God, which is basically impersonal, which is basically saying that just understanding him from the material point of view, it falls short of God's actual personality, his actual form, his actual activities. And when one actually comes in touch with that, one will change. Or one should change. So Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī says in relationship to this, he comments on text 43, this one about the breeze. The bliss of devotional service to the Lord, this is, he quotes Śrīla Śrīdhara Swami, another commentator, his commentary on this verse. The bliss of devotional service to the Lord is greater even than the bliss of directly seeing the Lord. Now later on, Jiva Goswami will take that specific statement and say, this is wonderful. The bliss of devotional service to the Lord, the happiness that the soul experiences by serving Krishna, is even greater than even seeing him. So that actually is the ultimate. That thing that no one wants to admit in the material world, that I am a servant, when that is directed towards Krishna, rather than being the source of embarrassment, it becomes the greatest of all positions and the greatest of all pleasures. Service to Krishna. Even better, because people talk about seeing God. Oh, I want to see God. Yes, of course it's wonderful to see God. But it is not as wonderful as to serve Krishna. That is what Śrīla Swami is saying. And Jiva Goswami says, this is a wonderful statement. So this, the fact of the pleasure of seeing God, this is described in this verse where Lord Brahma says, when the breeze carrying the aroma of the tulsi leaves from the toes of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead entered the nostrils of those sages, they experienced a change, both in body and mind. Even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. So impersonal Brahman understanding means everything is oneness. There can be no change when everything is oneness. So they were knocked off the Brahman platform, but knocked upward by seeing the Lord. The change of body experienced by the four Kumaras, what was the change? It was the ecstatic symptoms of the hair on the body standing up. And the change of mind they experienced was intense bliss, happiness in their minds. So this shows that the Lord, everything to do with the Lord is on the spiritual platform, because they had already transcended the dualities and the different aspects of the material world. They had already gone beyond that. So this shows that everything to do with Krishna is on the spiritual platform. The phrase Padaravinda Kinkajalka Misra Tulsi in the Sanskrit of this verse may be interpreted to mean, Shridhara Goswami says, the aroma of the tulsi leaves and the aroma of the toes of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or again, it may also be interpreted to mean the aroma of the Lord's feet, because when we think of someone's feet having an aroma, it's not generally conceived of as the most pleasant of all things. But the Lord's lotus feet are so fragrant. Everything to do with the Lord is completely fragrant. His fragrance is so captivating. And the fragrance of his lotus feet is all attractive. So the aroma of the Lord's feet and the aroma of the lotus flowers and tulsi leaves from his garland. The breeze carried these aromas mixed with the aroma of the Lord's transcendental limbs, and carried by the breeze, these combined aromas agitated the minds and bodies of the four Kumaras. Again, it could not be a material agitation, because they were above anything material agitating them. They were on the Brahma platform. And again, how the Lord's potency and beauty is so great and transcendentally potent that it wasn't directly the Lord's lotus feet. It was just the breeze carrying that fragrance. So how wonderful is the Lord. So within our hearts, a spark of desire has to spring out. Just like when flint hits a rock. So at least my heart is like a rock. And the Bhagavatam and the commentaries by Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, it's like the flint hitting the rock. So a spark of desire has to come, or should come. But yes, at least some curiosity, if not desire. How wonderful this must be. Would I think maybe I'd like to find out something, experience what it must be like, some curiosity? How beautiful the Lord must be. How fragrant are his transcendental lotus feet. How beautiful is his body. Text 44. So this shows again that the Lord's form is fully transcendental. Because the impersonalists, again, they have their philosophy is the Mayavadis, especially. They say that the Lord is Brahman, formless. But then when he comes to this world, what he does, he comes in contact with the mode of goodness. And then he adopts a form made out of the mode of goodness. So Jiva Goswami disproves this. First of all, it's clear that the Kumaras, they would not be attracted by anything composed of the mode of goodness, because they're above that. So either you say, and in the material world there is no pure goodness. Everything is contaminated by passion and ignorance. So is that saying that the Lord's body was contaminated by passion and ignorance? If there was passion and ignorance, why were the Kumaras attracted? Or if it was predominantly goodness, that means that it's predominantly goodness, but they're passion and ignorance. But why would the Kumaras be attracted? They're not even attracted to material goodness, even if it was pure. So fully transcendental, what is something? What would it be like to look at something purely transcendental? We can give analogies, comparisons, because an analogy, it helps see the unknown through the known. That is the purpose of analogy. Just like if we, what is it, Chandra Shaka Nyaya, that the moon, it's not there right now, but if someone says, where's the moon right now? We say, it's just above that branch of the tree over there. So the moon, of course, is not just above the branch. It's thousands of miles away. But by gazing at the branch and just looking a little above it, we can get an idea. It points towards the moon, points us, our consciousness towards the moon. So similarly, the Lord's beauty, it's thousands of times, millions of times more beautiful than anything of this world. But that's just to give us an idea, to spring, let a spark come in our heart of desire. It is not thousands of times more beautiful than anything in this world. It is something different. It is transcendental. Well, all our experiences in this material world are things composed of decaying matter. So just imagine. So the Lord's beautiful face, this is more description of what the Kumaras saw, appeared to them like the inside of a blue lotus. And the Lord's smile appeared to be a blossoming jasmine flower. After seeing the face of the Lord, the sages were fully satisfied. And when they wanted to see him further, they looked upon the nails of his lotus feet, which resembled rubies. What color are rubies? Yeah, reddish and sparkling. So the nails of the Lord's feet are like rubies sparkling. And what color? The color of ruby red, very deep and wonderful. Thus they viewed the Lord's transcendental body again and again. So simultaneously, it is exactly what we are looking for, so it satisfies us. But yet, it is so unlimitedly beautiful that we are not satisfied at the same time. This is the nature of a transcendental experience. It's simultaneously satisfying and unsatisfying. Because you want more and more and more and more and more and more. And so, they finally achieve meditation on the Lord's personal feature. So as a result of their purity of practice of yoga and meditation and achieving the Brahman feature, the all pervasiveness of the Lord, because of that and because of good fortune, they achieved meditation on the Lord's personal feature. Srila Prabhupada doesn't have a purport to that, but we'll read what Srila Jiva Goswami says. So after so this is what happened to the four Kumaras after the breeze entered their nostrils and they became ecstatic. You've walked into an interesting class for the first time, basically ever attending a class on Krishna consciousness. In any case, so what happened after the breeze entered their nostrils? So Jiva Goswami says, in the next verse, which is the one we just read, 44, Lord Brahma respectfully described the reason the four Kumaras felt transcendental ecstasy, because of what they saw. Lord Brahma says, the Lord's beautiful face appeared to them like the inside of a slightly blossoming blue lotus flower. After seeing the face of the Lord, the sages were fully satisfied. And when they wanted to see him further, they looked down the nails of his lotus feet, which resembled rubies. Thus they viewed the Lord's transcendental body again and again. Because
because they wanted to see the whole body at once, but they couldn't. Because the four Kumaras were not able to see all the beautiful features of the Lord's transcendental form, because they looked at the face and then they wanted to see the beauty of the feet, and then they looked at the beautiful feet and they wanted at the same time to see the beauty of his lotus-like fingers and his eyes, and they couldn't see it all at once by looking like this. So they began, even though the Lord was right there, they began to meditate on the Lord's form in their hearts. And in that meditation, they were able to see all the Lord's transcendental limbs simultaneously. The four Kumaras thought, how will we be able to see all the beautiful features of the Lord simultaneously? Because that is transcendental anxiety. Longing. So that enriched their ecstasy that they were already experiencing. So longing to see the Lord in this way, they meditated upon Him. This meditation on the Lord increases their ecstatic love for Him. By this meditation, the four Kumaras attained ecstatic love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 45. This is the form of the Lord which is meditated upon by the followers of the yoga process. So though this is the goal of yoga, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, yoginam api sarvesha madgitain antaratmanam shravan bhajate yomam same yukta tamamata. That of all the yogis, because different yogis have different realizations according to their advancement, the best yoginam api sarvesham, of all yogis, madgatena antaratmanam, one who meditates on madgatena, on me, Krishna says, within, he is the best of all yogis. He is in a class by himself. Shradavan, he meditates, bhajate yomam, he meditates on me with great faith, and not only meditates on me and worships me and serves me, not only meditating and looking. Because remember, service is even better, more wonderful. And he is the greatest of all yogis. So this is a long purport by Srila Prabhupada. Well, first I'll finish the verse. So this is the goal of all yoga, to be able to meditate on the Lord. And it is pleasing, this form is pleasing to the yogis in meditation. It is not imaginary, but factual, as proved by great yogis. The Lord is full in eight kinds of achievements, yogic siddhis. Sometimes yogis, they achieve great power, so those powers are contained by the Lord. But for others, these achievements are not possible in full perfection. So the Lord has them completely, and others, yogis, can get them, bits of them. So Prabhupada explains in his purport, because the four Kumaras were great yogis, and this is what they eventually achieved. The success of the yoga process is very nicely described here. It is specifically mentioned that the form of the Lord as four-handed Narayan is the object of meditation for the followers of yoga marg. In the modern age, there are so many so-called yogis who do not target their meditation on the four-handed Narayan form. Some of them try to meditate on something impersonal or void. That's what people usually think of as meditation. You just empty your mind. But just try to empty your mind, even for 2 seconds, and it just doesn't work. You start thinking, is my mind empty yet? Well, what was it that I wasn't supposed to think about again? Oh no, I have another 15 minutes to go. I have to watch out. It's impossible, because the mind needs substance. And this isn't just the materialistic mind, but the spiritual mind too. So the impersonalists, they say, okay, you can't meditate on the impersonal until you're very advanced. So you put this imaginary form of the Lord in there, and then when you're very advanced, you can get rid of it. But no, the example of the four Kumaras show that. No, this is the goal of yoga, to meditate upon the Lord's transcendental form. So to meditate on something impersonal or void, or to know that you are that, You are everything. This is not actually the goal. But that is not approved by the great yogis who follow the standard method, because these four kumaras are actually the gurus of all the jnani gurus. They're the gurus of all those who follow the path of knowledge. The real yoga marg process is to control the senses, sit in a solitary and sanctified place, and meditate on the four-handed form of Narayan, decorated as described in this chapter as he appeared before the great sages, the four great sages. This Narayan form is Krishna's expansion. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement, which is now spreading, is the real topmost process of yoga practice. Krishna consciousness is the highest yoga performance by trained devotional yogis. Despite all the allurements of yoga practice, the eight kinds of yogic perfections are hardly achievable by the common man. But here it is described that the Lord, who appeared before the four sages, is himself full of all eight of those perfections. The highest yogic process, marg, process, is to concentrate the mind 24 hours a day on Krishna. This is called Krishna consciousness. That is the goal of Krishna consciousness. To 24 hours a day think about Krishna. Smartavya satatam Vishnu vismatadu najatuchit savavini nishedacha etya eva kinka. This is the goal of Krishna consciousness. By meditation, one can understand that God is seated in one's heart. Even if one does not know it, God is seated within the heart of everyone. Which verse of the Bhagavad Gita explains this? There's a few, but anyone know? Savasya chaham padisamastha. And also, you know the other one? Good, very good. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam. The Lord is in Sarvabhutanam, in all living entities' hearts. He's within the heart of everyone. Not only is he seated in the heart of the human being, but he's also within the heart of the cats and the dogs. Bhagavad Gita certifies this by the declaration of the Lord Ishwara Sarvabhutanam Riddhishe. The Ishwara, the supreme controller of the world, is seated in the heart of everyone. Not only is he in everyone's heart, but he is also present within the atom. No place is vacant or devoid of the presence of the Lord. That is the statement of Ishopanishad. God is present everywhere, and his right of proprietorship applies to everything. The feature of the Lord by which he is present everywhere is called Paramatma. A person, so there's so much here about yoga. And the perfection of yoga is to meditate on Krishna. And then the Prabhupada has this very nice point about what we're trying to do is imitate Krishna. This is our problem. But it is not possible to become God, the Supreme, the Controller, and have everything go our way. It is not possible. But when we take our consciousness and our desires and surrender them with great devotion to Krishna, that elevates us. And that is called Krishna consciousness. And then, practically speaking, this is kutosto akshara uchite. Then we become one with God in desire. We give ourselves to Him. And then our happiness increases to the level of His, practically speaking. Even though we don't become one Him, we are always individuals. He is eternally an individual. This is the process of Krishna consciousness. Now, we are just independently trying to become happy, as if we were supreme, as if we were independent. And our results are misery. So we have to turn to Him, who is in everyone's heart. He is not far, He is near. So then Prabhupada explains, after explaining that point. A person in full Krishna consciousness acts by the dictation of Krishna. Krishna, Vidami Buryogam Tam, he tells him what to do due to the intimacy of relationship. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, dictation is received through the transparent medium of the spiritual master. When one is sufficiently trained and acts in submissive faith and love for Krishna under the directions of the bona fide spiritual master, the dovetailing process becomes more firm and accurate. This stage of devotional service by the devotee in Krishna consciousness is the most perfect stage of the yoga system. At this stage, Krishna or the Supersoul dictates from within, while the bona fide representative, while from without, the devotee is helped by the spiritual master, who is the bona fide representative of Krishna. From within, he helps the devotee as chaitya, for he is situated within the heart of everyone. Understanding that God is seated within everyone's heart is not, however, sufficient. One has to be acquainted with God from both within and without, and one must take dictation from within and without to act in Krishna consciousness. This is the highest perfectional stage of the human form of life and the topmost perfection of all yoga. And Prabhupada, just one little bit at the end over here too, where Prabhupada says, if one wants success in practical yoga practice, it is advised that he takes to the chanting of Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And he will actually feel himself making progress. Okay. Then after seeing the Lord, the four Kumaras begin to speak and they offer prayers to him and they express their realizations. And we shall, there's 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, five verses of their prayers. And we'll, if Krishna allows, do those tomorrow. Okay, thank you very much, Krishna. Any questions or comments? What does liberated mean?
They, well, Krishna said it was eternal. Yeah.
What the liberated means that they're, what's the simplest synonym for liberated? Free. Yeah, right? Liberated means free. And what's the opposite of being liberated? Bound or in jail or something like that. So when we talk about they're liberated, they're free from being bound by the material world.
Okay. So those souls who are actually associated with Krishna in the spiritual world and because they are eternal and the whole nature of the place is eternal, it's right, they have an eternal desire to be happy and that's fulfilled. Krishna's power to fulfill that level. And so even if the only way they could perceive Krishna was his aroma, still that would be increasing as pleasure eternally, right?
But
that's not my question.
Good thing, because it would have been a hard one for me to answer.
I just get that. So this vision of seeing Krishna when you take that to when Krishna actually comes to this material world, and there was a point I think I read in the Brahma Sangeeta, might have been one of the purports, that when Krishna was present, both devotees and non-devotees saw him, and only devotees cherished him. And just wondering how you could like explain that more, and maybe give some examples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was here.
You want me to give the ones? Why don't you give that one? You can. What's an example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who was doing that?
Just how, when his associates and disciples and devotees, how were they actually seeing him?
See, everything depends on your consciousness. We don't see with our eyes, we see with our mind. Yes or no?
Yeah.
We do. We don't see. First of all, the eyes is like, I used to know the number, but there's like, we have retina, right? You know, in the back there, and they're just being fired, so to speak, and there's so many sense stimulations come in, but the mind filters out and decides that this is a wood, and this is a platform, and this is a table, and this is a cup. It's the mind that does that. It's not the eyes. The eyes just see like this. So we're actually seeing with the mind. So one person looks at another person and sees this person is enemy. Two warring in Kosovo and Serbs, right? One looks at him and he says, this person is, I'm going to kill him. Hatred comes in his heart. And another person looks at him, that's my father. I love him. He cries if anything happens to him. So that the seeing happens in the mind, the heart actually, the consciousness, the citta. So when a person has a purified heart that is not covered by anything of this material world, goodness, passion, ignorance, technically, or material desires, selfish desires, and he loves Krishna, he sees that, and he sees Krishna as he is. Then Krishna, in reciprocation for that, reveals himself in his beauty to the heart. It's so peculiar that the mind is so peculiar that you could see something and you could like it, and then you know 5 seconds later your mind changes and that very same thing you hate, you despise. Does that ever happen to you? Yeah. So it all happens. This funny mind does everything. So when the mind is purified, when the heart is purified, then due to one's desire to serve Krishna, Krishna reveals his beauty to the devotee. It's more like that.
And so in natural fact, that same beauty that's present in world around this person is present in Krishna, but and in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu while he's here.
More or less, yeah. But devotees don't see, materialistic people don't see him. They don't cherish him, the term that you use, because they have a different kind of mind. They have a materialistic, selfish mind. So practically they don't see him. And for a devotee who has that, it's not only he sees the Lord once, as this verse says, there's not a moment where he doesn't see the Lord. This is most wonderful. Like the residents of Vrindavan. Even when Krishna wasn't there, they were seeing him completely. This is called up. Of course, that's very, very, very advanced. Premanjana Chorita Bhakti Vilacha. When one's eyes are covered with the salve of love. Just like when one's eyes are covered with tinted red glasses, we see everything red. When our eyes are covered with love-tinted glasses, then we see Krishna. I heard Prabhupada once say, he was looking for the word to use when one has that, and he used the word magic wand. It's like when you're touched by a magic wand, everything changes. So when we're touched by love of Krishna, everything changes. Our vision, everything. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. Why? Right, but why did he still want to kill him? Yeah, but he was envious. He had envy in his heart. And this is the prime thing that keeps us from seeing Krishna. But when he was purified by Krishna's lotus feet, then he actually surrendered to Krishna. But because of envy, get everything wrong.
Just so when the materialist people actually saw Krishna, they still recognized him as beautiful to the best of their material capacity, but they couldn't spiritually recognize him.
Yeah, because when I see someone who's who's wealthy or beautiful, instead of loving them, what do? You're attracted and then you're envious of them. You want to crush them and take their beauty. Or if I can't be as beautiful, at least let me ruin their beauty. If I can't be wealthy, let me at least burn your wealth. It's envy. All right, buddy. Well, there's three different stages of liberation. Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. So, on all of those, because they're free, they're all liberated, they're free from fear, because they know they're not their body, they know they're eternal. Most of our fear has to do with the body. So as soon as you know you're eternal and you have nothing to do with the body, all anxiety gone. But yet, what they're thinking is different on each one of those three different levels. So I don't know if that changes your question any. So on one level, someone may be thinking, whatever Krishna does to me, it's for my good and for his pleasure or something like that. So that's one thing. The on a Brahmavadis may be thinking, what can happen to me? I'm not my body. There's no trace of thinking about Krishna there. Think different things like that. So there's different ways to view the fearlessness. But the prime cause of fear is the identification with the body. And the prime cause of fearlessness is to see our eternality. But that's appreciated on different levels according to the realization. So the devotee, he sees Krishna's hand in everything. So when you have the person who you love with all your heart and who loves you, you know loves you fully, and he's all powerful, what's there to fear? No matter what seems to be happening, what's there to fear? But one needs the vision of eternity too. And that's nested within. Fear in us means that we don't know we're not our body, we don't know that Krishna is in control, and we don't know Krishna. All of it. Yeah.
So every time there's fear, one is in
the means that verse quoted from 11th canto, Bhayam Vitya. Fear is caused by seeing duality. Naveshitasya ishad apetasya vipariyo smriti. You see, everything is upside down and backwards. And the cure for that is bhaktyaikam guru devata. That you with one pointed fixedness, you perform bhakti, devotional service, that and see the Lord as manifesting in the Guru, in the spiritual masters. You see Krishna coming through them, and therefore you worship him as people naturally take care of themselves. With that kind of care, you worship the Guru like that. Knowing that Krishna is manifesting through him, and Krishna accepts the worship in that way. Okay, last question. Sorry, because it's late. Unless it's a real simple one. It's hard to get simple questions out of such a thick topic. To you or to him?
To me, and maybe I can give it to
him. Well, better I talk to him directly. Because there's so many reasons why, and I also feel like that sometimes. Why don't I see Krishna? I've been chanting for so long, and why am I still such a wretch? You know, life is like that, you know. Even there's tests that come from Krishna. too. So sometimes you have to pull your intelligence. Just use your intelligence to do the right thing, even though you may not be feeling it, because the feelings can fool us very often. There's so many reasons. There could be offenses. There could be so many things. But the person, whoever it is got to Vrindavan for a few days. if they want to experience something. I don't know if it was when you were here last, some time ago, when I told the story that there's this one, when I was in Vrindavan, this one Mataji who didn't speak any English, she was from Iran, she was a Muslim. And if you're a Muslim, you get taught very strongly that you can't worship the deity, that God is formless. So when she saw the deity, she was very much afraid. And she couldn't relate to them or reciprocate with them. Did I tell you this? So through an interpreter, she asked me about the deity form. So I gave so many reasons, you know, I told her so much philosophy and blah 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 blah. You know, it didn't. Of course, you get intelligence is convinced, but that's not everything. So finally, I said, "Why don't you go down in front of Krishna and Balaram and?" Right in front of the deities. Have you been to Vrindavan? You've been to Vrindavan? Just now going. So I told her to go in front of Krishna and Balaram, the deities there, and tell them that her problem, that she couldn't believe in them. And to stay there and explain the whole thing, because she could speak. I forgot the name of the language she would speak. What do they speak in Iran? Huh? You know, it's something. It's not English anyway. Huh? Iranian. Yeah, it's probably. It's not Greek. So I told her. I said, go down there and go in front of the deities, because these deities are so powerful and so wonderful. So she came back an hour later after putting everything to the deities like that. And she didn't have any doubts anymore. So it's hard to say what you should tell your friend. They're very powerful.
Yeah, sometimes the devotee expects too much.
Well, if your faith is strong enough, that's not too much. It's the problem is that there's often an incompatible ratio between what we're expecting and who we are. That's the problem. We should know our position. But if your expectations are great, I wish I had this tape, and I wish there was more time. I just heard it today of Prabhupada telling the story of Shakshi Gopal. Oh, it's so sweet. Do you know that story? Okay, well, I'm not going to tell it now. I should bring the tape. But anyway, if you give everything, you can expect everything. But we want to give a little and expect everything. That's the problem. So Krishna knows how to deal with us like that. Sometimes he just, you know, he grabs us by the finger and pulls us or something. Or by the ear or something. Sometimes he tests us. Sometimes he withdraws his presence. Suddenly everything you were doing before that made you so happy and chanting and this and that, suddenly there's nothing there and it's dry. That's the Krishna. He deals with us in his own way. He's a person, and we're people. Okay. Oh, good. Quick questions, but doesn't mean the answer is quick. Could you explain what the Srimad Bhagavatam says? That's also a quick question. Ultimately.
Not a means.
certainly not envy of Krishna.
So how do we offset envy of devotees?
But it's not like envy we have here. It's the kind of thing that Prabhupada talks about with transcendental competition. You've serving Krishna so nicely. Let me also serve nicely. Let me also do something like that, maybe. Instead of let me minimize your service and smash you. Get rid of envy. As long as you're asking simple questions, I'll ask you a simple answer. Just chant Hare Krishna. But don't stop. If you want to get rid of fast, just chant 24 hours a day. That's all. That's our whole process to get rid of envy. That's the whole thing. Huh? Get rid of what?
How does one get the desire to chant all the time?
By associating with people who have that desire, that helps. Krishna bhakti janma mula hoya saru sangi. Prema bhakti janma teho pona mukyanga. That's everything. From the beginning to the end, association with devotees is important. If you want to learn how to drink 7 and 7 and rum and coke and what's the others? Gin and thank you. All you have to do is associate with the people who have the taste, the connoisseurs. If you want to know the difference, the esoteric difference between Foster's and Victoria Emu export quality, just associate with those people, the pubwallas. So, I mean, that question we could answer forever, and everyone could speak on that. What's their own? What do they do when they don't feel like chanting? What do you do when you feel envy in your heart? What do you do if you've been chanting for a long time and you know, and the deities, you know, they're not reciprocating with you? What do you do? You know. It's a very nice thing to talk about. That's called istagosti, to talk about those type of things. But what do you do and share realizations? And that way, by having affectionate exchanges with the devotees, our hearts become soft. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Jai Sri Gauranga ki jai, Four Kumaras ki jai, Lord Narayan ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The breeze. Ki jai. Goa Bhaktivedanta.